Welcome to the Liver Lounge, your go-to podcast for the latest updates in hepatology, featuring discussions with the world's leading experts.
Hi everyone, welcome to the latest episode of the podcast by the Liver Foundation. I'm Margaret, I'm from the National University of Health System in Singapore, and I'm really, really honored to have with me today Professor Anna Leo. She's the Professor of Medicine at the Humanitas University in Milan and Head of the Center for Autoimmune Liver Diseases. So welcome, Professor Leo.
Thank you, Margaret. Thank you very much. It's an honor to be here.
Yeah, great to have you. I think we've asked you to come today to kind of discuss an article that you authored recently in the Journal of Hepatology. It's titled Incidence and Predictors of Hepatocellular Carcinoma in Patients with Autoimmune Hepatitis. It's a great study, and I think so maybe we will kind of start off this discussion by asking you what were some of the thoughts of the author, so what was the rationale behind the study?
So thank you, Margaret. Indeed, this is a study we recently published. It's actually a multicentric international study within the international autoimmune hepatitis group. We collected data from more than 2,000 patients with autoimmune hepatitis. The idea started a couple of years ago, talking about the risk of development of hepatocellular carcinoma in patients with autoimmune hepatitis. So we know that liver cirrhosis is the main risk factor for development of HCC, hepatocellular carcinoma. However, we all see these patients with a very long follow-up that do not develop hepatocellular carcinoma. So our idea was, do they have the same incidence of HCC than other etiologies? We know that HBV, for instance, is a very oncogenic virus, and patients with HBV develop a lot of hepatocellular carcinoma. We know we have data about alcoholic cirrhosis. We have data on HCV, but we didn't know much about the risk of hepatocellular carcinoma and autoimmune hepatitis. So that's how everything started. Of course, ideally, we would have liked to have a prospective cohort to study that. But since it is a rare disease, that would have taken years, decades even. So it was really not possible. So we decided to design a retrospective study using data from referral centers. We included data from 38 centers that collaborate in the International Autoimmune Hepatitis Group Retrospective Registry. It is a registry with a large number of patients that, importantly, have a very long follow-up data. So we have patients with even 30 years of follow-up. These patients usually start early. The diagnosis is made at young age, even pediatric age. So even 30 years of follow-up means that still you are pretty young in age. We collected data from the retrospective registry based on some time points that were established in the registry, but mostly based on the data that were available.
And prior to your study, because you mentioned that there's not much data available on the prevalence or incidence of HCC in patients with AIH, what was the literature like in terms of the incidence of AIH in incidence of HCC in AIH patients?
So we had some small studies and a meta-analysis that was published like 10 years ago, more or less. Like, I think, if I'm not mistaken, it was 2014. But that meta-analysis actually collected a variety of studies that were very heterogeneous and mostly with small number of patients. And then we had some data from administrative databases, which of course were of large interest, but different nature. So all those studies actually suggested that the incidence of HCC in autoimmune hepatitis was lower than other etiologies. But we didn't know much about the risk factors, and we didn't know much from large cohorts of patients with diagnosis made based on internationally recognized criteria. Because also with the administrative databases, even if they are very well done and precise, like I don't know, the one that is actually active in Denmark, but the diagnosis is always reported. You don't know exactly how reliable that is.
And
in
I
the
guess,
difference in this study.
Sorry, you were saying something, or?
No, the difference in this study is that these patients were all diagnosed in referral centers. So we can be pretty sure about the fact that they do indeed have autoimmune hepatitis.
Just to clarify, and I think this was also in the methods in your study, these patients who were diagnosed with AIH were not necessarily like biopsy proven AIH, but as long as the expert centers had the diagnosis of AIH, and so they were then included in this group of patients. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. You're right. Not all patients had a liver biopsy, but the majority of them did. And this is also an important information, and it's a critical point. You are absolutely right. But in some situations, maybe if you have a pediatric patient in front of you, or maybe if the start of the disease is very acute with liver insufficiency, sometimes the biopsy was not performed based on the experience and the decision of the clinician that was actually taking care of the patient. Again, still, the majority of our patients had a liver biopsy.
Thanks for clarifying. I think that's a good point, that sometimes the young patients, like the pediatric patients, may not undergo a liver biopsy. So maybe we can move on to discuss your key study results. Perhaps Professor Leo, you could summarize some of the significant study results, or some of the results that you would like to highlight to listeners of this podcast.
Okay, so overall, the survival of our cohort was 95% after 5 years of the diagnosis, and 63% after 30 years. What's the proportion of patients that were alive after 30 years mean follow-up. Of those patients studied, the cumulative incidence of HCC after the diagnosis of autoimmune hepatitis was very low. It was 0.6 at 5 years, 0.9 at 10 years, and 6 after 30 years, 6%, which is really, really low. And if you only include the patients that were cirrhotic, so a well-recognized risk factor for the development of HCC, the cumulative incidence of developing HCC was 2.6% at 5 years and 5.6 at 15 years, which is actually much lower than the incidence of the cumulative incidence of HCC in other etiologies.
Thanks. Can I just ask, was there any difference in, one question would be, how many patients had cirrhosis at baseline and how many developed cirrhosis on follow-up? And my second question, as a part of this, would be, was there any difference in the incidence between these people who already had like cirrhosis and those who subsequently developed cirrhosis?
So in our the cirrhotic patients at diagnosis were 453. So still a significant number for patients with autoimmune hepatitis. Those patients indeed had a higher cumulative incidence of HCC compared to the whole cohort. But the incidence remain still significantly low compared to those that did not have liver cirrhosis. HCC was significantly associated to the presence of cirrhosis. So even if the incidence was lower than the non-cirrhotic patients, we were able to demonstrate that there is a significant association with cirrhosis. The same with liver transplantation and death. So even if lower compared to other etiologies, the main risk factor remains the development of liver cirrhosis. Another important point was the response to treatment. So we also looked into the potential association of response to treatment and development of HCC. Our hypothesis was that probably patients that did not respond to treatment may progress and probably develop more HCC. And even if there was a tendency, actually the difference was not significant. So we were not able to prove this this association. Other risk factors that were associated to HCC in our cohort were age. Mm-hmm. Older patients develop more HCC, obesity, and there was also a strong, actually very strong association with the PSC variant of autoimmune hepatitis. So patients that had autoimmune hepatitis PSC variant, the old overlap syndrome with PSC, had actually a much higher risk of developing HCC in our cohort.
So thanks for telling us the key messages of your study. I'd like to ask, because I think in your study you did mention that some of the patients had transient elastography done, and was there any correlation between like the degree of fibrosis and development of HCC, and how many of the patients who developed HCC, firstly, how many of them were cirrhotic, and secondly, when they were diagnosed, what was the stage of diagnosis? Were they diagnosed early or was it diagnosed later?
So if you consider, this is a study that collects data from many years ago. So actually we excluded patients that were diagnosed before 1980 in order to avoid a time associated bias. But starting from 1980, all data were collected. Of course, in the 80s and 90s, elastography was not available. So those patients don't have data on liver stiffness. Mm-hmm. The diagnosis of cirrhosis in those cases was made with liver biopsy or the presence of clinical signs of cirrhosis, which means decompensation, varices, or ultrasound showing signs of portal hypertension. But we don't have data on liver elastography in all our patients. Another thing that needs to be considered is that at diagnosis, most of the patients are active, have high transaminases, and the reliability of liver stiffness in these patients at diagnosis is probably not accurate, and it has not been demonstrated. So the diagnosis of cirrhosis in our cohort was not based on liver elastography.
Great answer. So, I mean, that would have been something interesting to look at, so that, you know, clinically, whether we can apply this in some regard. So I think just wanted to ask, because you did mention that overall patients with autoimmune hepatitis related cirrhosis tend to have a lower incidence of HCC compared to those with cirrhosis of other etiologies. Do you think that this would then kind of change your recommendation to this group of patients in terms of HCC surveillance? Now, we know that HCC surveillance is with ultrasound plus minus alpha fetoprotein every 6 months. And in these patients, the incidence doesn't seem to meet the recommended, because the surveillance guidelines do say that ideally it should be like 1.5% each year, and then you recommend surveillance to make it, you know, cost effective. So what are your thoughts about this?
Yeah. Wow, this is a great question. And actually, we thought about that a lot. So I personally believe that probably you need to adapt your strategy of surveillance based on the characteristics of the patient. So if you have one patient that is cirrhotic, is obese, is above 50 years of age, probably I will stick to the surveillance schedule that you just mentioned. However, in a patient with no cirrhosis, with no other risk factor, it's actually probably not cost effective. Our study, however, was not designed to determine the cost effectiveness of the surveillance program. So nowadays we can only suggest to probably be flexible and model your schedule of surveillance based on the characteristics of the patients. My personal belief is that probably these patients don't need to be surveilled. It's not really cost effective. However, I would recommend to carefully assess the risk factors of the patients in order to decide if you need to perform ultrasound every 6 months. Also, another personal impression is also that we usually see patients with more than one etiology of liver disease. So if you pay attention to the results of a study, in the end, what you see is that those patients that have metabolic risk factors are those that develop more HCC. So those are patients that probably have also steatotic disease plus autoimmune hepatitis. Because indeed in our data, the patients that develop ACC were those that were obese, that were older, and that had a higher BMI. So I will make a careful assessment of the etiologies and the nature of the damage, of the liver damage in these patients before deciding not to surveil them.
Good answer. As a follow-on to this, you know, many of the patients with AIH, I mean, so some of them are steroid dependent, right? And you may not be able to get them off like prednisolone or even budesonide. And, you know, this is associated with many cardiovascular risk factors in the development of metabolic syndrome, especially if the patient is long-term prednisolone. So just wondering, in your data or in your experience, right, these patients who are on long-term, who have long-term steroid use or who are on long-term immunosuppression, especially like azathioprine, which is also known to be linked with other forms of cancers, are they as a result of development of, you know, all these cardiovascular risk factors, or just by virtue of being on long-term immunosuppression, would that then predispose them to be more likely to develop HCC, and therefore would you be more cautious from a clinical perspective?
So I'm not really able to answer your question based on our data, because we were not able to find an association between treatment and development of HCC. What I can tell you is that actually all of our patients had chronic immunosuppression. So I don't think actually that the doses that we use long-term in autoimmune hepatitis are actually a risk factor for development of HCC. In autoimmune hepatitis, we tend to use really low doses of immunosuppression. Usually, azathioprine is 1-2 milligrams per kilo per day. It's actually a pretty low dose. And at least based on our data, we cannot say that that dose of azathioprine is associated to the development of liver cancer.
So it sounds like, because I think earlier you mentioned that it seems that response to treatment may kind of, you know, be helped with reducing the risk of development of HCC. So the message that you're probably trying to send is that need to ensure that the control of activity of AIH is more important and not to be so worried about the side effects of the immunosuppression. Am I getting that correct? Okay.
Yes. Perfect. That's okay. Absolutely what we wanted to say.
Okay, that's great. Just one final question for you. And this is, has this study, like, what do you envision the field of HCC in AIH-related cirrhosis be like? What are future studies that you think, or future research directions that you think can be come from this particular study?
So I would really like to know more about the pathogenesis of HCC in autoimmune hepatitis. So we all know that the liver has really a great level of tolerance. And we assume that the chronic inflammation is actually a risk factor for development of HCC. In autoimmune hepatitis, if the disease is well controlled by therapy, you actually don't see inflammation in the liver. So I'm very, very curious to know what is the main pathogenic driver of HCC development in these patients. I would really like to know that. Indeed, we see, for instance, that a strong risk factor in this cohort is the association with PSC, primary sclerosing cholangitis, which actually has a completely different pathogenesis. So probably there's something there in at the molecular level, at the inflammation level, that is completely different compared to other etiologies. And I'm curious about that. So we are designing a translational study to really investigate these aspects.
Yeah, so that I think is a very nice answer, I think. And we look forward to future developments in this field also to inform our clinical practice. So thanks a lot, Professor Leo, for your time. And I hope everyone learned something from this podcast today.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks again for the invitation. Honored to be here.
We have come to the end of the episode. Thank you for joining us, and stay tuned for more captivating discussions.